them to get here.
Ready? Good afternoon. Call this meeting of the State Department Veterans Budget Division to order. It's 2 minutes after 4 p.m. on Wednesday, March 11th, and a quorum is present. Members, today we have four bills on the agenda. We're going to start with Senator Cohen, a bill related to Minnesota Public Radio. Next, Senator Rest and Senate File 802 related to the Board of Accountancy. Then we're going to hear from Senator Johnson, Senate File 737, the Board of Cosmetology. Lastly, but not least, Senator Rosen talking about Farm America with Senate File 1223. It's my intention to lay these bills over for possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill. And with that, Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And with kind of half an apology, one of the problems of chairing the full finance committee is I just go bouncing around. And I'm actually a member of this committee, and we're supposed to do committee members last. I've never been able to go to, so I appreciate you putting me first on the agenda.
And, but Senator Cohen, the thing to remember is you made it count. The time you got here, you made the quorum.
Yeah, so at least I can do that for you. So, Mr. Chairman, members, this is very simply the request that we've seen before for equipment grants to Minnesota Public Radio. Obviously, this division has jurisdiction over public broadcasting. You'll have a chance to listen to the folks from TPT, from AMPERS, I think all of great value. Would like to ask for a little bit of testimony from the folks who are here today from NPR as to what the particular request is for this year and what they're looking for in terms of the equipment grants. But again, not dissimilar from what we've done in the past.
Sounds good. So you have Lisa Radzik and Christy Booth with you.
Correct.
And Ms. Sure. Radzik, would you identify yourself and continue on?
I wasn't sure who was going first. So.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. Chairman Saxhog. Senators, my name is Lisa Radzik. I am the Managing Director of Community and Government Relations for Minnesota Public Radio. It is good to be here with you today. It's a gorgeous day that you don't want to hear about, I'm sure. With me today is Christy Booth. She lives and works in Bemidji, Minnesota. Christy is NPR's Director of Network Stations, and she will follow these opening remarks. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today on Minnesota Public Radio's Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Grant Request. Just got mixed up. I wanted to start by mentioning the fact that there are two public radio entities in Minnesota. There's Minnesota Public Radio, and then there's AMPERS. As most of you know, AMPERS stations are located in communities across the street, communities across the state, and they provide, they provide programming that is specific to the communities that they serve. Minnesota Public Radio is a statewide entity. So what we're listening to, if we turn the radio on right now, is the same thing that folks in Rosa would hear listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We believe, and the nearly million Minnesotans that listen to us each week, and the many, many more that listen, the other listeners that listen to AMPER stations would tell you that we both provide valuable and unique services that Minnesotans rely on. Now more about NPR and our grant requests for the coming biennium. NPR operates 42 stations and 38 translator stations in communities throughout Minnesota. We provide news and information as well as cultural programming on classical NPR and The Current. We are proud of the fact that NPR's network stations blanket the entire state. It is because of that reach NPR is able to serve as the backbone to Minnesota's emergency alert and Amber Alert systems. What does that mean? It means that all Minnesota radio, television, and cable broadcasters rely on and monitor NPR's radio network 24 hours a day. It also means that NPR is a key part of the Minnesota Integrated Public Alert Warning System team. As you can see from the handouts provided in your packets that look like this, this team has representatives from the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, Minnesota Emergency Management, Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Minnesota Homeland Security, the National Weather Service, MnDOT, Police and Fire Chiefs, Minnesota State Patrol, and others. In the event of emergency, a nuclear disaster, a national emergency, a natural disaster, or a child abduction, this integrated team works together to transmit throughout Greater Minnesota the appropriate signals to all Minnesotans. Now, NPR has been around since 1967 when it started at St. John's University in Collegeville. Many of the network stations around the state were built in the 1980s and 90s, and this means a majority of the systems that make up our network are 25 to 35 years old. But the life cycle of these systems normally lasts no longer than 20 years. NPR's engineering team routinely surveys the operational health and status of all systems in the statewide network. Priority is placed on public safety, population undercover, and routine replacement of aging systems. The repair and replacement needs of our Greater Minnesota stations and translators is more than double our general fund request of $674,000 each year for the next 2 years to repair, maintain, and upgrade our network stations throughout the state. With me today to share more about NPR's service to Greater Minnesotans, Greater Minnesota, is NPR's Director of Network Stations, Christy Booth.
Thank you, Ms.
Booth. Go ahead.
Thank you, Lisa. Chair Saxhog, committee members, my name is Christy Booth, and I'm NPR's Regional Network Director, and I bring special greetings from up north. Thank you for the opportunity.
Is that Bemidji?
Bemidji.
Up north and all the places from Bemidji on south to here.
Does that help, Senator Saxhog?
And it's not Bemidji this morning, actually. Thank you for the opportunity to share more about NPR today. The general fund equipment grants are only used for Greater Minnesota infrastructure. These grants ensure that all Minnesotans receive the information they need in times of emergency. These grants ensure that all Minnesotans have access to the same services as do communities here in the Twin Cities. As a manager in Bemidji, I know how valuable NPR service is to my community, as well as others in Greater Minnesota. I hear it every day. For many in Greater Minnesota, NPR is their only source of Minnesota news, information, and cultural programming. We know people depend on us. We hear from our listeners, even when we're off the air for just a few hours, for planned repairs. But when we have major tower work or antenna projects, like we did last summer in Moorhead, when both our NPR News and classical NPR stations were either at reduced power or completely turned off for several hours a day, we really heard from our listeners. We received angry phone calls and emails, and one of our NPR listeners, who's also an illustrator, took the time to send us a drawing to show his frustration over the loss of his classical NPR service. State funding keeps our stations up and running and well maintained. The maintenance of this critical network faces a variety of problems that could be eased with increased funding. Minnesota weather can also cause unexpected and large-scale equipment damage. Much of the network was built, as Lisa said, 25 or 35 years ago, and key infrastructure now needs to be updated, repaired, or in some cases, replaced. Did you know that a strong wind can cause a tower to vibrate with such force that any older equipment on that tower also vibrates, and this can cause damage, and eventually an antenna could actually go bad? When a tower light burns out on a 1,000-foot tower, that's about 75 stories up, that's a job that requires a professional. Some jobs we can plan for to be proactive, but other things we cannot plan for. Like our Minnesota weather, one ice storm stripped the lights off our Worthington Tower and caused damage to our antenna. Falling icicles punctured the roof of our equipment building, and those puncture holes caused water damage. In addition, as technology continues to change, NPR stations need to be kept up to date to ensure maximum working order and coverage. Many of the NPR stations cover smaller communities, like the many communities you all represent. But people, no matter where they live in Minnesota, in a big or small town, in International Falls, Redwood Falls, Thief River Falls, our listeners depend on NPR, and we need to be there for them, not only with our content, but also access to emergency alert communication. The general fund equipment grants are only used for Greater Minnesota infrastructure. These grants do not go towards NPR's metro stations or programming. Thank you, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Questions for either Ms. Booth or Ms. Radzik? Any additional testimony from anybody else in the room? Okay. Senator Cohen, will lay it over for possible inclusion. And thank you for stopping by.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. And obviously, it's not exactly a secret that I'm a strong proponent of the support we've provided for public broadcasting. And you've heard what NPR has to offer relative to not just simply, you know, the Twin Cities, but what their statewide responsibility and outreach is. So appreciate the chance to allow this presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, and Senator Cohen, just so we have it on the record, the appropriation that we're asking for here is $622,000 fiscal year 16 and $622,000 in fiscal year 17.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Rest. Welcome, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have not seen the fiscal note prepared for this bill. I wonder if there one exists and if I could have it.
Yes, we do have one.
We're good. Let's get it for right there.
Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So what we have here, Senate File 802.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 802 is a Board of Accountancy bill, and it's been in the state and local government, which has jurisdiction over the policy. It comes to the state government finance division because of section. Find it here. Section. I would direct members' attentions to section 10. The penalty section that would allow the board to, on lines 6.1, to impose a civil penalty not to exceed $5,000 per violation. The current amount is $2,000, and it is has not been changed for 25, 30 years. And the Board of Accountancy does have sanctioning power over accountants who are responsible to it, but their thought is that the $2,000 limit for civil penalties has long ago since been able to be effective against accountants who are taking advantage of their clients. So the civil penalty is an attempt to be a deterrent, and that this increase to $5,000 is seen to be reasonable, and they hoping at that level it will be a deterrent. The rest of the bill is an updating to the uniform accountancy statutes. Minnesota, unlike some other states, puts the Uniform Act under which accountants conduct their business in this state in statute rather than doing it in rule. And so that's why we frequently have Board of Accountancy bills, because that's what they're doing. They're updating what has been promulgated at the national level, and we abide by that. So the fiscal note, if you would note there, is it's very small, just a few thousand dollars, and the $13,000 in the full-time equivalent positions in order to deal with the additional responsibilities. But it's very small, but it is a cost, and so that's why the bill is here.
And say, rest, it's $10,000. For the year 2016.
Is it not? That's not what I see on this fiscal note.
What is it?
This is the one we've got.
The one I was just handed. Oh, it's a different bill. Bill, here's my bill. My bill. It's a cosmetology bill. It's a good bill here. The accountancy statutes indeed is a $10,000 in the fiscal year 2016.
So, Senator West, would you have Mr. Fragnito and Ms. Jensen say a few words?
They're here to answer questions, but the big issue is just the justification for being allowed to increase the penalty language, and certainly you can hear from them if you think it's necessary.
All right. So we have so the major change here is the change in civil penalty from 2,000 to 5,000.
Exactly. What the policy has already been dealt with in the state and local government committee.
Very good. Is there any questions from the committee? No questions. We will lay this on the table for inclusion and
perfect.
Or do you want this to go separately?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think it's been the practice that when a Board of Accounts bill does have any kind of fiscal impact that the Finance Division has carried both the policy and the fiscal.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
So thank you, Senator
Rest. Stay here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have Senator Johnson. Welcome, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
we have Senate File 737.
Senate File 737 is a Board of Cosmetology and bill, and I know you're interested in the fiscal impact, and I would ask Gina Johnson and or Jim Hurt. The executive board.
Senator Johnson, could you speak into the...
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yep.
I'm hard of hearing, and so is Senator Metzen.
What?
You sound like somebody I know. So we have Gina Staus here and Jim Hurst from the organizations that are represented in this bill, and I would ask him to speak about the fiscal implications.
Ms. Stoss?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gina Stoss, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Cosmetology. Thank you for this opportunity to be here to testify to the bill. As the policy portion of the bill passed out of state and local government and out of respect for the committee's time, my testimony will highlight the fiscal elements of the bill, but I'll be glad to discuss any portions of the bill. So if the committee so chooses Section 9, I believe it's going to be starting on lines 3.3 will be the first section of fiscal impact, which is the fee changes. Currently, the board is on a three-year license fee schedule, which is unique in comparison to other professional licensing boards. The board itself hasn't asked for a fee increase in almost 10 years when it was moved out of the Department of Commerce and created. The increase in the appropriation will be completely offset by the fee changes, the expedited application fee, assessing a reinspection fee, as well as the increase in civil penalty violations that are a result of increased inspections, as well as administrative fees. The board will still collect $600,000 over its appropriation, and the money will remain in the general fund. The board cannot provide essential licensing and public protection services under its current fee schedule and appropriation. The board, at a minimum, should be conducting approximately 6,500 inspections per year and currently can do half or a little less than half of that. The board also should be investigating over 800 complaints per year, and currently, with our staffing volume, we are at 100 complaints per year. And sometimes, just to note, cosmetology is much more than a haircut. And, you know, individuals, for instance, who've had breast cancer, had their lymph nodes removed, might go to get a manicure to feel better. And they end up with an infection from an improperly disinfected implement. And now they don't have the immune system to fight the infection because of the lymph nodes that have been taken out due to her breast cancer surgery. So it is much more than just a haircut. Continuing on in the bill, beyond the fees, the next on line 4.32 to 4.33, this fee here, it's a voluntary fee to create, if you would choose to have your license expedited, to be processed in 5 business days or less. This has been a request from our licensees for those that want to be, we have a statutory mandate that we process in 15 business days or less, and this would be 5 business days or less. Moving on to the bigger fiscal impact, or more fiscal, in section 22 on line 10.2, this is the rulemaking authority to create a new license that was approved in the policy section. So this is a rulemaking authority. And the section 23 just designates that all the funds go back to the board as we are a general funded agency. And I will turn it over to Jim if he has anything else.
Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Excuse me, Mr. Hurst. I should ask if anybody in the committee has a has a question for Ms. Stoss, and Senator Stumpf does. Excuse me, Mr. Hurst.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, do you process all of the applications within 15 days or less now?
Well, Ms. Stoss.
Let me go back to my statement with that. Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, the by statutory obligation, the board is required to process all applications within 15 business days. And in order to meet that requirement, we are constantly moving staff from other divisions, hiring temporary staff, which does result in neglecting other division work and creates inconsistency in our service delivery, which we feel lowers our customer service. So we believe that we do license within 15 business days. We either have to issue the license or deny the license.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, so if you do that licensing within 15 days or less, and you do it by moving staff around, do other areas get shortchanged? Or delayed?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stump, that would be correct. A good example is we only have one compliance staff person now because we've had to do shifting within the agency to meet that statutory obligation.
Okay.
So, yes.
Other questions? go ahead, Senator Manson.
Section 22 on the rulemaking authority.
What do you think you want them to end up with? And my reason for saying that is I've always said, put in the law what you want or what you really mean. And what happens when we give it to rulemaking authority goes into them looking like a chicken and comes out looking like a frog. And what you really want and think you need is different once the rulemaking authority takes the responsibility over. So can you spell out what you really mean in there, or isn't that possible?
Ms. Stoss.
We have the election certificates, and I always kind of question this, you know, what do you want them to do, and why don't you tell, instead of telling them what you want to do, tell it in here. Does that make sense?
Mr. Chairman,
sense to me. Let me say that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, it's my understanding our current set of laws in 155A are relatively brief. I would say they give the board the authority. They tell us what licenses we can have, and in defining this type of license, which is where the rulemaking comes into play, it's being consistent with the current standard of law and how our licenses are defined. So I believe that granting the rulemaking would, is what's consistent with the practice of how our laws and rules are structured. Otherwise, if we added all of the rules governing everything, or the requirements governing lines 10.20 to 10.23, the statute would potentially become 5 pages long for just one type of license. So I think this is the advice of the reviser, and in consistency with current practice.
All right, I don't know what that means, but that's fine. The advice of who? A reviser?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we like to take their advice, I guess. I guess that's fine.
Okay.
I ask that question all the time, and I'm very serious about it. I mean, sometimes we can't do it all here. But I just think that we make the decisions here, and so often the rulemaking will come back, Mr. Chair, we're kind of opposite of what some of us on the committees thought. But yeah. We'll give you a pass on this one, okay?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 9 has to do with fees. There's a lot of changes of the numbers, and I'm just trying to get a sense for, are we overall collecting more money? If so, how much more money? If not, tell me so.
Ms. Stotts.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gadzalka, just I want to make sure I answer your question correctly. So the increase in fees, currently the board we collect $600,000 more than we're appropriated. We're a general funded agency, so our current appropriation is roughly $1.3 million. So the fees here between the fee schedules, yes, it's increasing. The initial application fees as well as the renewal fees. And the amount of money that the increase would result in would be appropriated back to the board, 100% of it.
Senator Gazalka.
So, Mr. Chair, to testify, then, what is the purpose of raising the fees then?
Ms. Stoss.
Mr. Chairman, as I stated earlier, there's several, and Senator Gazalka, there's several things that the board cannot do. One would be the example that I gave Senator Stumpf, which is when we have to process within the 15 business days, or now that our licensees have asked for the 5 business days or less, we would need staff in order to complete that. So currently in our licensing division, we're always shuffling, we're hiring temporary staff, which leads to inconsistent, potentially information and customer service, as well as as I stated earlier, on a national level, in cosmetology, inspections should be conducted annually. And of annual inspections, you also get re-inspections. So therefore, we believe we should be conducting about 6,500 inspections per year. And with our current staffing volume, we can do less than half of that. So we need to. So the funding devoted to the board would also go to the more inspectors, as well as I stated, is that the board, we have over 40,000 licensees, and our complaint volume should be in the realm of around 800 complaints. Of those, roughly 650 are based on inspections. The 70 complaints come from our licensing division, such as fraudulent licensing, working without a license, non-renewal, and as well as 85 complaints a year come from the public. And we don't have the staff to take that on. And these positions, you need bodies. We can't create more technology to do them necessarily more efficiently. We've gone through lean processes, and we need the people to do the processing. We can't have a computer do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then one more question. So you said you want to do 6,000 inspections. That's out of the 40,000, so basically once every 6 or 7 years, or no?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazalka, we have over 40,000 total licensees. We license the people, the businesses, and the schools, and we have roughly 5,500 salons. So we estimate that we need to do inspections on all 5,500, and of that, 1,000 will need a reinspection, because those that pose the greatest risk to consumers and the public, before we move them down the complaint route, they need to be reinspected at least 1 to 2 times, depending on how much they've improved. So that's why we feel we need to do roughly 6,500 a year.
So last question,
Senator Gazalka.
So your goal basically is to inspect every salon every year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazalka, correct.
Right. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to this section 11 on page 5. And what exactly does that mean? It seems, when I read it, it seems like it says that if an applicant contains discrepancies, the applicant is subject of a complaint, investigation, or an applicant has a pending disciplinary actions before the board will comply with the time limits prescribed in section 15992. Okay, what's 15992?
Ms. Duff.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this is a state statute that it's my understanding all professional, well, our board, I believe, as well as all professional licensing boards need to process any application within 60 days. And so what this is doing is if you look at the above section, roughly starting on line 5.5 to 5.10, when the 15 business day timeline was put in place, the language to give the board an opportunity to give extra time, the language isn't accurate in how the board can actually conduct business. So what this is doing, cosmetology unfortunately has fraud involved in licensing. This is a nationwide problem. So we look at things, for example, on an application, we match signatures. If someone is already a license holder of ours or they're applying for the first time, we'll look at the differences in their signatures, like on page 1 versus page 4. And if we see an inconsistency, the staff want to be able to, and the board want more than 15 business days or 5 business days, depending on which timeline you're looking at, to further investigate it without opening a formal complaint. And because then that creates the administrative law process. We would like to bring maybe the licensee in for an interview with our licensing panel, and this would give that board the opportunity. Otherwise, the board is required, if we receive an application in and we're unsure what to do, the board as a full has to meet within 15 business days, which is somewhat problematic. They live all over the state. It's very challenging to get all members within 15 business days for every application because they come in every day. I don't know if that answered your question.
Not quite.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, is this kind of a way to say, well, we can get around the 15-day provision, rather than have 15 days, now you have 2 months?
Ms. Doss.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I think what this actually does is it allows the licensee, the applicant, the opportunity for us to see if they made a mistake. Sometimes there's simple, honest mistakes, and sometimes there's not, because otherwise the board is put into a black or white decision. We either have to issue the license or we have to deny the license. And if we deny the license, that will then invoke the administrative law process, which is extremely expensive for both the licensee, because they normally then, or the applicant, they would generally have to hire a private attorney. So we look at that this is an opportunity for the licensees as well to not be denied an application and give us supplemental information. I don't think the intent is not at all to not work within the 15 business days, and I think it also is trying to clarify what the legislature tried to do roughly 4 years ago when they were trying to give this opportunity, but it wasn't quite articulated in, I think, the manner it meant. And by no means are we looking to go around it. We do pride ourselves in how quickly we license, but we want to make sure we're licensing people that deserve the license and not those that are trying to be fraudulent applicants.
And Mr. Chairman, just for my information, how many of establishments would fall within that area where you cannot license within 15 days?
Just us.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, very rarely would an establishment fall under this. It's generally an individual application, and I would say maybe 10 or less a year out of the 3,500 new licenses we issue a year and the 12,000 we renew a year.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am a little concerned about the fees that are proposed in the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to add the numbers, and you know there is a fee schedule that to me, you know, if I want to add the numbers, so this is section 9. So if I want to obtain an initial license, it's $155. So I also need the initial license application fee. That would be an additional $40. And then, so initially, in order to start the initial practitioner and the initial license and the fee for initial license application is $390. So that's just for the individual itself. Then if in that process, you know, I have a salon, I have to add the $250 for the initial license for the salon. And then it just goes on. And then we have the school licenses, which are the same. So if I have a license to start the school, the application fee, $1,000 for an application fee for a school. And it just seems excessive to me. And I just wonder why we have all of these fees. It just seems a lot to me.
Ms. Stoss, can you help Senator Torres-Ray out?
I sure can. Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres-Ray, I'd like to clarify that the initial license application for an individual is at the proposed fee is at a total of $195 for a three-year fee. The way that the schedule had to get crossed out and deleted, I do understand that it is a little confusing. However, the proposed fee is $195, which relates to $65 a year. The fees in the proposed schedule, regardless of which ones you're looking for, are significantly lower than similar professions. So a good example, like the barber board that comes in front of this committee, they pay $88 per year for an initial license per year, and the proposed fee for a cosmetologist would be at $65 a year. This, you know, it's kind of the same philosophy as you go on. A renewal for an operator license per year in lines 3.13 to 3.17 on a per-year basis is $38.33 a year. And a barber, to compare, they're at $77 a year for a renewal license. So we feel we're significantly lower. We've looked at licensed practical nurses, dental assistants, pharmacy technicians. We've looked at plumbers. We've looked at a lot of programs that are non-4-year degrees. And we feel, first of all, like I said, we're on a unique 3-year schedule. Most of these boards that I just mentioned are on an annual or every 2-year schedule. So we're really only collecting 1/3 of our renewal fees annually to support the operations. The other thing to consider, a lot of boards do not have the inspection component. So 100% of their staffing resources are devoted to their licensees, in-house services, where we devote services to our inspections. Furthermore, when we're looking at, we did an analysis to look at the similar boards and how much they devote to a licensee each year, which basically it takes their appropriation and it divides it by how many licensees we have. Most boards that are similar are in the $70 a year range value back to the licensee. Our board right now only devotes $33 in value per year back to our licensee. And we feel that the public isn't being protected because we can't inspect annually. We can't hold those that are most egregious in their public protection violations to enforce, go through the complaint process.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, so what about the schools? Because, you know, if a school has to pay $4,000 for the initial school license, and let's say they have nails, hair, and skin, there will be $3,000 for each initial license, which will be $9,000, and then $1,000 for a license application fee. So if I'm reading this correctly, that will be $9,000 for each license plus $1,000 for the application fee. That's $10,000 for plus $4,000 for the school licensure. So that's $14,000. Am I reading that correctly?
No.
No.
Okay. Senator Saxog, Senator Torres-Ray, no. If you're going to open up a cosmetology school, regardless of what you offer within it, it's one license. Okay. Just as if you open up a salon and you want to offer all three types of services, you only pull one salon license. If you want to offer nails only, you would pull a nail technician license. The application fee was put on by the legislature. The board did that was to support the 15 business day fee that the that was put in. That was not a board asked for fee, application fee. On the $4,000 for a salon, a school, the board probably spends anywhere from a month and a half to 2 months on a consistent basis working with the school to get them open. Most schools have a lot of them are mom and pop. They're private. We spend a lot of time with them, and I feel that they are getting a value back from us helping them set their curriculum. We have to make sure their financials are in place, because a lot of these aren't falling under the Minnesota Department of Education as an accredited school. They are just coming solely to us to start a school, operate it, get students in. So we do feel that we are providing a big service back, because this is the foundation of where the cosmetology, aesthetics, and nails education starts.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dean. Oh, excuse me, Senator Johnson.
Just Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, just to your observation here, the licensees are very satisfied with this fee schedule, and they know how important it is to have their salons and spas checked out and to follow up with complaints and so forth like that. They have been supportive of this matter, so it isn't anything that anyone is complaining about in the industry.
Senator Deems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Stiles, could you tell me what the increased revenue will be with all the increased fees estimated for a year?
Ms. Stiles.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the increase in the license fees would result in approximately $730,000 in the license fees.
Per year.
Per year.
Thank you, ma'am.
Senator Gazalk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson, you just said that they're asking for this, so I want to clarify. They're asking to be inspected every year, because that seems a lot to me. I don't know if we do that in every industry or not, that we inspect them every year, but that seems like a high number. But I don't know this industry, so I'm asking that. I can't imagine that your average cosmetologist would say, I really want you to come inspect me every year because I might get fined, and I don't see that. But do you have data to show that, or they do surveys, or what?
Senator Johnson?
My point, Senator Gazalka and Mr. Chair, is that the licensees are satisfied with the fee increases because of the services they receive from the boards.
Senator Johnson, Senator Gazalka, I think maybe Mr. Hurst might bring some additional information to this. So after this brief respite from the start of your testimony, Mr. Hurst, we're going to let you get going here.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I'm here today on behalf of the Salon and Spa Professional Association. And we are the trade association representing cosmetologists in Minnesota. And I am here to testify in support of Senate File 737, inclusive of the fee increases that are reflected in the legislation. And to your point, Senator Gazelka, yes, cosmetologists take their professionalism very seriously, and that extends across the board with all holders of a license. And to that degree, yes, we sincerely expect to be inspected on an annual basis. And quite honestly, that helps raise our professionalism. And there's a lot more to cosmetology than just cutting hair. There are serious health and safety and sanitation matters to be concerned about. And at the bottom line, it ultimately is to protect the general welfare of the citizens of the state. So with that, I'm just going to conclude my remarks because I know we've taken up a fair amount of time, but I did want to get on the record to say that we, the association, recognize the fine work that the State Board has done, and in lieu of the fact that we have not been subject to a fee increase in over 10 years, it is time to step up to the plate and support the State Board and continue supporting them with the fine work that they do. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hurst. I probably should have let you continue because that statement helped a lot, actually. So, all right. Any other additional questions from the committee? Any comments from the public? All right. We'll put this on the table for possible inclusion, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And lastly, Senator Rosen, Senate File 1223. Welcome.
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome to the cool side of the Capitol.
I love it over here. Mr. Chair, Senate File 1223 is the Farm America bill. And if you're not familiar with Farm America members, it's Minnesota's Agricultural Interpretive Center that was established by this legislature in 1978 to preserve the state's rich agricultural heritage. It's a 501c3 not-for-profit organization with 3 full-time employees, 2 part-time, and the rest is volunteers. And they're very many volunteers for this. This bill basically it would provide some supplemental funding to address a growing list of deferred maintenance and needed repairs to facilities and grounds. Members, you have a list of those. I mean, a very detailed list in your packet of what is required for Farm America, and also a little sheet about how wonderful this program is, and it's colored piece right here. There is approximately 20,000 visitors a year. Close to 3,000 of those visitors are from schools that conduct tours in the spring and the fall for our third to sixth graders. As you know, it's very important to let them know basically where milk comes from where our agriculture has come from and where it's going. They're doing a lot on future the new look, the future of agriculture, which is extremely important. The annual budget for Farm America is now just over $400,000 with income that's generated through memberships, crop sales, donations, sponsorships, facility rental, miscellaneous grants, events, admissions, and an annual state appropriation of $115,000 a year. That state amount, by the way, has come down over time from an original $250,000 level to the current $115,000 per year, while expenses and deferred maintenance continue to climb. And the Minnesota Historical acts as the fiscal agent in these pass-through dollars. So we're asking for $200,000 per year to just basically do this deferred maintenance. $200,000 for 16 and $200,000 for 2017 to do this deferred maintenance, which is extremely important. They have a new board. They're very progressive. I'm very excited about it, and if you've never been down to Farm America, I would invite you down, especially in the fall for their fall harvest event. It's very exciting, very fun. With that, I have Bob Zelinka with me and Roger Steinkamp from the board, and I will let Mr. Zelinka start, I believe.
Mr. Zelinka, you want to just identify yourself and give us some input here?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Bob Zelinka. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. Our association represents the grain elevator and feed mill industry here in the state of Minnesota. I'm also chairman of the board for the Minnesota Agricultural Interpretive Center. I took over as board chair last April, taking over for Ed Frederick, who is to be the provost down at U of M Waseca. He was an institution at the Farm America. He's still on our board as excuse me, as an ex officio member. We do, as you can see, just to follow up on what Senator Rosen talked about, we do have a lot of deferred maintenance there. Last time we received funding from the state, in addition to the funding that was guaranteed when the was organized in 1978 by the legislature, we have just, again, a lot of deferred maintenance, and it's hard to keep up with the what we get from the state at this point in time, which is $115,000 a year. But we have, again, a very exciting board. We've got a new business plan. We spent a lot of time on the past and the present. Our current focus is on the future of agriculture. And we have a lot of events, and we do a lot of education. That's really our primary focus is agricultural education. Our focus is primarily on students, 3 to 6 grades primarily, but we have a lot of adults that come on our site as well. And it's just exciting to be involved. Our association has been very supportive for quite a few years, and I got on the board about 5 years ago representing our association as well. So won't go into any more detail, but just to let you know that it's we have a lot of needs there that need to be addressed, and I just appreciate the support you could give us to get that additional shot in the arm for us at Farm America.
Mr. Chair. Good.
Yes,
I would like to say that the last additional funding from the state was in the year 2000, when we did construct the visitor center, which is used quite a bit, and that does provide some funding as far as rentals. But it was because it's a 501c3; it doesn't have any government. We can't bond for it. There's no government entity attached to it. Actually, C. Spigum helped get some additional funding in that year, and we need a permanent long-term funding just to keep this going, and it's our only agricultural center in the state.
Right. We had what was our modest funding last year?
Mr. Chair, I think we gave them about $10,000 for a roof, but I don't know if it made it through conference committee. Kevin, Mr. Levine.
It was a good try.
Yeah, I think in the supplemental bill last year there was about $25,000 given. That was in addition to the $115,000 that they get in the regular operating budget.
I don't know if that patched the roof or not, but I understand what the problem is. Senator Claussen has a question.
Thank you. This looks like a great place to take my grandsons, but I'm wondering, where is it located? I'm not familiar with it.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Claussen, it is about a mile and a half, or 7 miles?
No, 2 miles
two
west.
Miles.
2 miles west of Waseca.
2 miles west of Waseca. So I serve Waseca County. Senator Jensen serves the town of Waseca. And it's the land was donated, and they've been working on it. And it's a wonderful place to spend a good Saturday, Sunday afternoon.
Thank you.
Good. Mr. Steinkamp.
Yes, Mr. Chair. What I'd add into this, I just came on as the executive director of Farm America about...
Mr. Steinkamp, could you just identify yourself for the record?
Yes, I'm Roger Steinkamp, the executive director of Farm America. And I just came on a few months ago. And there's probably not a more urgent mission that I saw than interpreting agriculture between two camps that are grown more polarized, mainly the people in urban areas and the people in the rural areas. And they're both talking at each other, but they're not understanding each other in a place where they can come together and touch and feel and see what's going on. And the science hasn't changed since 1850, but the way we deal with it has. And our needs in the world have changed. You know, we're able to produce more food on a smaller parcel of land. And some of the techniques we use now are pretty awesome if you understand them. And so it's a convenient meeting place where we can actually demonstrate and not just talk about it on a TV screen, that you can go out and you can touch and feel the new hybrid corns that we have and see what they can do. You can also go out the other door and go back to 1850, and you can see some of the exact same thing that was going on back there and understand how we got from there to today. And in between, pass through the 1930 farm that we many of us have fond memories of, you know, when we grew up on the farm. And we have a great bunch of volunteers. We have the old tractors there. We're going to bring back some the workhorses and oxen. That's what people that have fond memories of Farm America remember. But they're not seeing the unmanned vehicles scouting the fields yet, and they're not seeing some of the new precision ag that's going out there and actually producing more with less. And so I think this is one convenient place where I think it'll eventually, when we get this thing back to where it should be, it'll be a place where, like some of the other great sites, it'll take you more than a day to go through and absorb what's really there for you. And in the meantime, have a great time with your family. You can still go out and touch the cow and play with the sheep and do that kind of thing, too, with your grandkids. And it's a great learning experience.
Mr. Chair.
So just to go over the capital improvement, repairs, betterment, and what we're asking for here, the total at the bottom for Senator Rosen is $250,100, and then at 216 is $192,500.
Mr. Chair, and I could have Mr. Zelenka, but the bill is for $200,000 for each
That's
year.
That's about an average.
And I do appreciate, we all appreciate the $25,000 from last year, but this will work on these deferred maintenance. There's a little more of a cheat sheet in the handout.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That talks about the foundation repair and security and shingle replacement, that type of thing. And if it also in this the nice little, it talks about where they're headed with renewable energy and the agreement they signed with Xcel to put on a wind turbine and a solar, and also collaborate with the biofuel industry to conduct workshops and displays on ethanol and biofuel, which is extremely important for our agriculture because that is agriculture also. So it really is encapsulating a lot of the issues that ag brings to the table.
Senator Deems.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Rosen, for bringing this bill forward. For us that are at the table here, if some of you have not been out here, you certainly want to go take a look at what's going on out there. And when we look at the amount of the request, if you go out there and see what they do, plan on spending a day, if you've got an agricultural background, it'll take you back to the times that you were involved in agriculture. If you don't, it certainly will give you a good introduction to agriculture in any era that you want to see it at. So I'm very supportive of this, and I think that this is a real good, when we take a look at what's going on out there for what they're asking for, this is a real bargain for the state of Minnesota to have that interpretive center and to have so many volunteers do so much of what they do for the amount we put into it. So thank you, Julie, Senator Rosen, for bringing this to the table.
Good. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also want to thank Senator Rosen for bringing this. And, you know, it's interesting to see the simplicity of this proposal and the practicality of the proposal. You know, just windows and roof, it's just like the minimum, right? So I so appreciate that, and I hope that we support that. I was just going to say briefly to Executive Director Mr. Steinkamp that I disagree with you. I don't know if I kind of misheard your testimony about the divide between urban and rural Minnesotans and our understanding of agriculture today. I, in fact, believe that we understand agriculture in urban settings better than ever. And we are very interested in participating in these conversations, especially in sustainable agriculture. But I was looking at your board, and I was looking at your handout has an interesting youth board advisor. And then you have a board that says diverse and committed to agriculture. And I was thinking, you know, diversity is in the is a lens. The people in this picture, to me, are not, you know, could incorporate some youth voices, some more women, and some more people of color. And then I will attach the word diverse. And you do have a group of youth board advisors that I hope are part of those conversations. But I do believe that there is a need to incorporate those voices at those levels as well, so that that divide that perhaps is in some people's minds just gets narrowed over time.
Mr. Chair?
Yep,
Senator Torres, very well said and very well noted. When I graduated with my agronomy degree in 1980, I was one of four females at the Colorado State University. That's an ag school. So now I look at this youth board of advisors. Half of them are female. It's pretty impressive. So we're getting there. And it would be wonderful to have more diversity, racial diversity on the board. And it's just a matter of getting people involved. So I do appreciate that. Well noted. Thank you.
Other questions, comments from the committee? Senator Rosen? This was a good presentation. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. And
thank you for the hearing.
Yes, sir. Do you have a comment? Seat yourself. And is it on this particular bill, sir? All right. Do you identify yourself and go ahead?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In committee, there's opportunity to speak on 1223 bill. My name is Rick Keller. I wonder if the Chair would allow me to provide some handouts. It's very relevant as we continue to hand money out to third-party non-state agencies. So it's a correspondence from the House Research.
No. Well, this isn't about this particular. You're talking about this particular bill.
Yes, it's about the state of Minnesota releasing money in millions to third-party vendors in the state of Minnesota, not have to follow Statute 16E.03.9.
Council, you know what that particular. Our council will take a look at that, sir. Do you have any comments? Before we do that.
Again, my name is Rick Heller. Unofficially represent the twice exceptional print disabled. I just thought I'd bring a little food for thought here and drop a couple of seeds for the voices that perhaps are underrepresented in the state of Minnesota. Since agriculture has cultural in it, I do believe perhaps these twice exceptional or print disabled or both are probably part of the pre-readers and non-readers in our state. And I'm all about engagement, and I appreciate a bill like this that gets individuals engaged since it's education related. And since we're providing money of $200,000 for education process to continue to improve the prison to school pipeline to turn it into the talented pipeline, I think it would be most effective if the state would consider that when we delegate money out to third-party vendors, that they start considering that they use accessibility law like state agencies are required to do. I would ask that perhaps if the chair will allow one of the people with Farm America, they would yield to a question I'd have for them.
I don't think we aren't doing any type of a question and answer here. We do appreciate your input and your testimony is well taken.
More put any questions, Chair. If otherwise, thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Other input. Not. Thank you very much, Senator Rosen.
Thank you,
and members, and we'll include this in the omnibus bill.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
members.
All right, member. That Senator Torres Reyes' committee can have that extra time for, we'll call it the frantic first deadline week. And, and right now, we'll probably have a hearing, though, on Wednesday, depending on how many bills are reported to this division through the rest of the week. My office will keep everybody posted. Any questions? Not, the meeting's adjourned.